Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
Let's go, boy. Happy Tuesday to you, North America. The mothership has connected. Welcome aboard. It's the 3-hour Deflector Shield Shindig. DA with you from the CBS Sports Radio studios in Hotlanta. Broadcasting to affiliates nationwide and north of the border. Anchorage to Atlanta, San Diego to San Angelo, Kalamazoo and Waterloo. We are on the air.
They listening, D.A. Everything we saying, D.A. Everything.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. How is everybody doing today? Day two from Radio Row here in Atlanta, the Georgia Convention Center, downtown Atlanta. And boy, we got a good show coming up for you this morning as we continue to make our way through the week with tremendous guests and all types of fun behind-the-scenes details of Meraz and I on the road in the ATL getting ready for Super Bowl 53. We'll have Jerome Bettis join us here on the show in approximately 15 minutes from now. The Pro Football Hall of Fame running back will be dropping on by at 20 minutes past the hour. We'll talk to Jerome about obviously finally getting over the hump and winning a Super Bowl in 2005, his final season. But I also want to ask him, what's the best team he was on that didn't win a Super Bowl? And also remember, Jerome began his career with the Los Angeles Rams. So a little full circle as the Rams are back in L.A. and in the big game. Also, Sean McVay is the topic of so many different conversations down here in Atlanta, looking to become the youngest head coach ever to win a Super Bowl. He's already the youngest head coach ever to be in a Super Bowl. We'll talk to Craig Hoffman, who has covered him in Washington when he was an offensive coordinator there from 106.7 The Fan in D.C., coming up here behind the scenes with Sean McVay as his rise, his ascent through the NFL coaching ranks was so dramatic, coming up here later on in the hour. Also, the author of The Tome of the Hoodie, Belichick, Ian O'Connor, award-winning author, is going to join us in hour number two. So is my good friend Levin Reed from Boston's WBZ Sports to give me the Patriots side of things in a season that really a lot of things did not go well for them. We'll talk about the Brow and his contract and team demands and trade demands. We'll talk about what appears to be the Rams not fearing Tom Brady. And we've got episode number two of Get Full. Meraz and I taking Atlanta by storm this week. Although maybe it's Atlanta taking us by storm. All of that coming up this morning on the show, so hit us up on the phones at 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. You can always hit us on Twitter as well, DA on CBS. All types of feedback welcome on the old Twitter machine, so do it there. We'll also be letting you know where we will be hosting a little DA show get-together for the listeners. We're going to be somewhere on Thursday afternoon. I want to let you guys know if you're coming into town from Boston, from L.A., if you're going to be in the region, in the area, if you are in Atlanta and around the game on Thursday, we want to throw a little party for you guys, get everyone together, say hello, meet some people, kiss some babies, and you guys can rub Meraz's Buddha belly. So we'll let you know where we're going to do that coming up here on the show today also. But let's start with Rob Gronkowski, as Gronk There's been these thoughts that he is going to be retiring or thinking about retiring for the last couple of years. In fact, last season, last offseason, the story went that Rob Gronkowski was ready to retire, but the New England Patriots trying to kind of brought him back into the fold, and when he was perhaps going to be traded to the Lions, then he threatened to definitely retire and said, I am not going to play anywhere unless it's with Tom Brady. And so the Patriots, that trade of the Lions and one of his former coaches, Matt Patricia, who of course was on the defensive side of the Patriots, that fell through. Gronk came back. When asked about playing beyond this season, beyond Sunday, Gronk said, that's a tricky question. You're trying to get around me. You're just trying to get some answers over there. But like I said, I don't know. I haven't done that sit-down yet. I've got to do that sit-down about 2 weeks after the season. Then I'll know. Gronk is only going to turn 30 coming up here in May. So he's not even 30 years old yet. And Gronk has already had an amazing career. I think Gronk is going to retire. I think after this game, he's going to retire. I think this season has been frustrating for him from an injury standpoint. I think this season has been really frustrating for him from an inability to play at his highest level. And I think that Gronk is fatiguing and exhausted by the end of this kind of run, being so physical, being so banged up. And I think the types of defenses that teams have shown against him, knowing also that he has kind of built up a career where he could go into entertainment, he could go into wrestling, he could go into something else, just be, you know, this kind of guy in the party circuit and host Yo Soy Fiestas. There's probably a post-career, post-playing career that he's already envisioned and ready to get into. So my question is, if Gronk did retire after Sunday's game, where does he end up ranking all time? What is his NFL legacy? It is where we begin. It's your cold open.
It's a great season. Look where we are now. We're at the point where we want to be. So it's another successful season. It was a grind, dedicated a lot. And all our teammates, coaches, we all put a lot in it for sure. I'm thinking all how to get myself to go full go in the game. Just working on that.
As your career is winding down.
It is?
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes!
It's your cold open.
So I think Gronk's being coy there. I think he knows the questions are abounding. And I think also that his coach, Bill Belichick, has always drilled into the mind of Gronk and everybody else, don't make it about you. Don't make it about your news. Don't make it about your career, especially Super Bowl week. And so I think Gronk is very leery of doing that and walking that line. But I absolutely believe after the season, he's going to walk away. I think Gronk, when he's mentioned as the greatest tight end of all time, people are missing a lot of historical context. And while he has been one of the most dominant forces in his prime, and Gronk, I think, will end up in the Hall of Fame, Gronk is not the greatest tight end ever. And it's because he lacks the longevity. It's because he has been so injury prone over the course of his career. It's because he doesn't have the depth of stats and the depth of years that so many other guys have had, or at least a couple of other guys had. This is not a shot at Gronk. Gronk has had, for his, where he was drafted, questions about his health coming out of Arizona, questions about his back coming out of Arizona. He has had an impeccable career, and he has been the most dominant tight end of his era. But he also plays in an era where offensive stats, especially for tight ends, are at an all-world, all-time level. They were never this way for Ozzie Newsome. They were never this way for John Mackey. They were never this way for Mike Ditka. Gronk is not even the most prolific tight end statistically of this era, let alone of any other era. You know, Tony Gonzalez has 15,000 yards receiving. 15,000 yards. Gronk has half that. Tony Gonzalez has 1,300 catches. Gronk has 500. You want to look at Pro Bowls? Gronk has 5 of them. Tony's got 14. Tony Gonzalez triples his receptions, doubles his yards, triples his Pro Bowls. Look at some of the guys ahead of Gronk in terms of all-time receptions. Jason Witten, Antonio Gates, Shannon Sharp, Greg Olsen, Vernon Davis. Ben Watson has more catches than Gronk. And again, this is because Gronk has been so injury-prone over the course of his career. Gronk has been amazing, dominant, at times unguardable. But you cannot call him the greatest tight end of all time. That belongs to guys like Tony Gonzalez. I would say also John Mackey. Mackey was the first to really be a great pass catcher as a tight end. And I think now, because we're kind of caught in the moment, a lot of people don't remember Mackey as a tight end, don't remember the prime of Ozzie Newsome's career in the 70s and early 80s, don't remember that Mike Ditka was once one of the great tight ends ever, not just a cartoon head coach. People tend to forget that while Gronk has been dominant, he's also just the most recent. He's had a great career, a Hall of Fame career, but it's not the greatest tight end career of all time. And I do think he's going to retire after this game. And he will be the most crucial target, you could argue, in the second half of Brady's career. And perhaps for one guy, the most crucial target in all of Tom Brady's career. But that does not make him the greatest tight end ever. Here's your phone number, 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Hit us on Twitter as well, DA on CBS. And I think there's an element to Gronk's season where he's been unable to be 100%. Defenses have thrown a lot at him, try to be as physical as possible, knock him around. And I think draping guys all over him has really made him feel like he's playing in a phone booth. And knowing that he's always had post-career entertainment plans, and he's been this big, lovable galoot, I think there's a part of him that can't wait to get to his post-playing career. A lot to get to this morning on the show. When we return, we're talking about Gronk, a future Pro Football Hall of Famer. How about a present Pro Football Hall of Famer? Jerome Bettis is going to join us. And in this game, there will be 2 first-round Georgia running backs, Todd Gurley and Sony Michel. So there's going to be a first-round running back that wins a Super Bowl out of Georgia. The question is, have we now swung the pendulum back to valuing a great running back and what he can do? Because there was years where we were devaluing that. We'll talk about that with Jerome Bettis, plus his Super Bowl run with the Steelers in 2005 and the best team he played on that didn't win a championship, and his days with the Los Angeles Rams, just like the Rams are back in L.A. now. All coming up next, DA Live from Radio Row in Atlanta all week long here on CBS Sports Radio.
Is live in Atlanta to cover Super Bowl 53, featuring the Rams and Patriots, here on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back to CBS Sports Radio, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us. DA with you, and so pleased to be joined by my next guest, a Super Bowl champion, a guy that knows the Los Angeles side of things a little well coming into this game, Super Bowl 53. He's a 6-time Pro Bowler and a member of the Hall of Fame. Jerome Bettis joining us this morning. Jerome, how you doing? Good morning.
I'm great. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, man. My pleasure. It was so weird to not have the Los Angeles Rams in the league for so long.
Yeah.
You began your career in Los Angeles with this team, and now they are back in L.A., and suddenly in the Super Bowl, are you having flashbacks to the early part of your career?
not flashbacks, but you know, really excited about the potential with the Rams, and great to see that the city is backed them, and that there's a lot of excitement and energy in LA for the Rams. Because when I was there, obviously it started to kind of go the other way, which was a little disappointing, and we ultimately left and went to St. Louis. So it's great to see that they're thriving in LA.
It was interesting because the early part of your career, you're right, there was kind of one foot in, one foot out of Los Angeles for that organization. Did it create distractions or an unknown as you guys were trying to go through those early part of the 90s into the mid-90s?
Yeah, it was a huge distraction, especially, you know, the year before the move. There was the big question of would it happen? Would it be announced? And so we went through a full year of that. And then the next year, there was that question. And then when it was announced, then it was, well, guys started to think about all the other things outside of playing football. And that's never good for a football team to have to think about and deal with other issues while you're playing football. You want to be, you know, focused on the game itself, and it was hard for us to do that.
Jerome Bettis is our guest here on CBS Sports Radio. I'm sure that throughout this week you'll be asked about your Super Bowl team with the Steelers in 2005, but you played in some really elite Steelers teams that could not close the door. I want to ask you, what was the best team you played on that didn't win a Super Bowl?
Oh, wow.
You had some good ones there, especially in the late 90s, early 2000s.
I would say the team that lost to the Patriots in Brady's first
0-1.
An 0-1. That 0-1 team, I think, was our best team. Although the 1 year we went 15-1, that year I think we were like 13-3. We were incredible as a team, throwing the football, running the football. We could do it all. Our defense was, I think, ranked number one. I mean, we had a great team. And we went in that game, and really our special teams failed us. They had a fake punt. No, I mean, they had a punt they returned for a touchdown, and they blocked a field goal that went back for a touchdown. So they got 14 points off of special teams mistakes, and that's what cost us a game. We lost by 7.
It's right. You're absolutely right about that, and it's interesting because at that point in time, we did not know that Tom Brady was Tom Brady. In fact, in that game, Drew Bledsoe came in.
We knocked him out of the game,
And
Bledsoe had to come in. And he threw a touchdown that ultimately was the deciding factor, and they ended up winning the football game. So that was a heartbreaking game because we knew we were the better football team. They were just starting, just getting going in terms of with their excellence, their years of excellence, and that was one that got away from us.
Jerome Bettis is our guest, Pro Football Hall of Famer here on CBS Sports Radio. It's interesting because when you were with the Steelers after you joined them in 96, there was 3 AFC Championship games at home that you guys lost in. Broncos and then 2 to the Patriots.
Yep.
Was there a point in time after probably that 04 Patriots loss that you were saying, boy, it might never happen for me?
That was it. I actually retired after that loss. I mean, I went in that next day. Talked to the team, told them, you know, how much I appreciated what they did for me and how hard they played as teammates, and I was forever grateful. I mean, there wasn't a dry eye in the house. I mean, was crying, and then afterwards, told Coach that I was retiring. They convinced me to just take some time off. I thought about it, and after going to the Pro Bowl and everything, and decided to come back. So I literally was saying to myself, okay, I'll never be a champion. That's not part of the deal. But I had a great run, and that was the way I was thinking after that terrible loss. After 15-1 season, we were a really good football team, and to lose it again, it was one of those I thought it would never happen.
Had you guys won the Super Bowl that year, would you have stayed retired?
I would have. Absolutely. That would have been had we gone to the Super Bowl and not won, I still would have retired.
Because you would have at least
got
a bite of the apple.
I would have at least got there. To have never, ever got there with as good a teams that we had, it was disappointing. Really
must have been not only a validation for you when you guys finally got there in 05 and won it, but you must have felt a real validation for Coach Cower because he had dealt with that stigma of being unable to win the big one.
Yeah, and it wasn't fair to him. He had coached some great teams. He had us prepared. We were ready to go. We made the mistakes, and that's what, at the end of the day, cost us. You know, we didn't play clean games. We turned the football over. We made the mental mistakes. And as it turns out, as we learned, those are the things you can't do, and especially against the Patriots. Make those type of mistakes. And we made them, and we turned the football over, and you don't win those games in those critical moments. But what we've found out is that you have to learn how to play in those games. You have to understand, and through the process of losing, you gain the knowledge of how you play in a football game of that magnitude. And so, as it turned out, we learned through those losses.
Jerome Bettis, Pro Football Hall of Famer, joining us this morning here on CBS Sports Radio. You're also here coordinating with FedEx for the Air and Ground Players of the Year. When you look at some of the ground players of the year, Zeke and Gurley and Saquon Barkley, Gurley, of course, playing in this game, does it give you a little warmth inside knowing there's first-round running backs that are being credited with part of the success? Because there was a little while there where it was, well, running backs aren't as important anymore.
Well, the only reason that was the case was because there weren't a lot coming out of the college ranks. And that was because these colleges were going into a different phase in terms of offensive. And so the offenses were spread offenses, and they were looking for littler running backs that they could throw the ball to out of the backfield or who went laterally down the line of scrimmage. There wasn't the pro-style running backs because all of those guys were now playing linebacker because the colleges weren't looking for them. But there's still four or five schools that run that offense that want that type of running back. And if you don't get them from those schools, then you got to wait. And it's only a couple. Georgia, LSU, Ohio State, Alabama, USC.
Most of the SEC.
That's it.
You know,
right.
That's it.
And if you don't get them from there, if they don't have them that year, then you're not going to get a quality running back. And when you look at all these kids, you see, look at where they're coming from. They're coming from those powerhouse schools. Unfortunately, there was a lull with those kind of kids. You didn't have them. And so you thought that the running backs were kind of written off. It just, you didn't have the great ones. And now you see a run of these really good running backs. So now everybody's saying, oh, we got to have a running back. Oh yeah, you do. You have to have a running back. And when you look at Sony Michel, he is a power running back. He came from Georgia. Because he's small in stature, don't get it twisted. He runs between the tackles with the best of them. And he's a physical downhill runner. And that's what you have to have at this level to win a championship.
Yeah, that Georgia pipeline is wild, man. You have Chubb, you had Gurley, you had Sony Michel. They just keep pumping out really quality running backs. So this year, FedEx is going to make a $20,000 donation to the USO, which is amazing, in the name of both the winning quarterback and running back. The Player of the Year nominees through the air, Breeze, Mahomes, Rivers. On the ground, as we said, Zeke, Gurley, and Saquon Barkley. Once again, FedEx, Air and Ground Players of the Year, and they're teaming with the USO, which is awesome. Fans can vote in a poll on the NFL Twitter page at NFL.com/FedEx as well. And on Twitter, use hashtag air and ground for all the information. And then NFL honors coming up on Saturday. Jerome, it's always great to catch up, buddy. Thanks so much, my man.
No, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Jerome Bettis, Pro Football Hall of Famer, joining us here on the show. When we come back, more from Radio Row in Atlanta. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
DA is live in Atlanta to cover Super Bowl 53, featuring the Rams and Patriots here on CBS Sports Radio.
And there are so many different ways you can listen and watch the show this week as we are in Atlanta on Radio Row throughout the week leading up until Super Bowl 53. Listen to us using the CBS Sports app on your phone or radio.com or Apple Music. Or you can also listen to us on Sirius XM Channel 206, in addition to all the wonderful affiliates across the CBS Sports Radio Network. And watch us on any device. Yes, the simulcast is cooking this week as well. Watch us at watchda.com. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Great news, quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Go to geico.com. In 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. There has now become this kind of mythology surrounding Sean McVay. He just turned 33 years old. He's the youngest head coach ever in Super Bowl history. And everybody is trying to find the next Sean McVay. So let's do story time about Sean McVay. He was in Washington as tight ends coach for 3 seasons, and then the offensive coordinator as well for 3 seasons. A guy that has covered him for a number of those years reports on Washington football for 106.7 The Fan in D.C. My good friend Craig Hoffman, who joins us alongside Radio Row. Craig, good morning.
Good morning, D.A. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you as well. And let's start with what's true about McVay and what's false about McVay.
Okay.
Let's start here. Offensive genius, true or false?
I'd say true. He just really understands how football's supposed to work. And the way I always judge other people talking about football is what I call the McVay scale. Do they talk about it as an 11-man game, how the pieces interact? And Sean was really the guy who kind of taught me to think about the game that way just from interviewing and being around him.
So did you know in D.C., that this dude was special before he even got a head coaching job?
Oh, yeah. That was actually one of the things I was told by some other reporters coming in. It's like, you know, this is the dynamic between these people. This is the quarterback thing, which at the time was a mess with Kirk and Robert and everybody else circling around. But it's like, hey, that McVay guy, he's really smart. You should get to know him. I was like, okay. And after the first time I talked to him, I was like, I get it. It's kind of undeniable. Instantly you go, all right, I get why everyone thinks really highly of you, especially when you start talking football with him. He's got it, whatever it is.
So did Washington make a mistake in not elevating him to head coach?
They really didn't have a way to do that, which is unfortunate. They were stuck between a rock and a hard place. The Grudens and McVays, obviously Jay Gruden was the head coach at the time and still is. The Grudens and McVays literally go back generations. Sean's granddad was the architect, GM of the 49ers teams.
Right.
And John and Jay's dad, I think, was a coach on that staff, I think is how that goes. But literally back generations, they knew each other. And so there's a relationship there. Sean's break-in point was with John in Tampa, fresh out of college as a quality control type of guy. And so you couldn't really fire Jay. One, they were coming off of 2 pretty good seasons, one in which they made the playoffs, one in which they barely missed. We're playing on the last season. Had Kirk Cousins not had a dud of a game, they probably make the playoffs for 2 straight years.
Does that happen?
It happens, and okay. Especially at the end of the season.
Got it.
Look, the evidence is what it is. That's a debate I don't feel like having because
okay.
It brings back nightmares to
me. I'll tell you what the debate that we'll be having,
okay.
Hoff, but okay.
All right. But there was no way to really fire Jay and have Sean take over because Sean was not going to stand for firing one of his best friends. So they got screwed. Really, they needed him to hold on a couple more years, and instead his stock just rose too quickly.
Craig Hoffman joins us from 106.7 The Fan in D.C., McVay has an amazing memory. McVay is a successful head coach right off the bat. McVay's only 33 years old. He's ruggedly handsome. He's dating some remarkable supermodel Romanian, I believe.
Yes, I believe that's correct.
Lives in Los Angeles, now a multimillionaire. What's the McVay weakness? I mean, everything feels like it's coming up Sean McVay. There's got to be something he's not good at.
I don't know if he can sing or dance or anything like that. Like, I don't know the away from the field weaknesses. I can tell you as a coach, sometimes he overthinks stuff. Like, sometimes the genius becomes a little cramping in his brain. And there were certainly times in Washington where, like, the one that really sticks out to me, they had a Monday night game against Dallas in 2015 where there was the only game they lost in the second half of that season. They were rolling, and Dallas was not very good, and he just overthought it. And he kicked himself for the rest of the year and was like, I can't let that happen again. He had a really bad play calling day, was not sticking with the things that had gotten him there, didn't trust his kind of the game plan and abandoned it too quickly. And so there are times where he can overthink things. I think obviously as he's progressed as a coach and gotten more experience, those kinds of things are going to happen less. But yeah, he's kind of got a lot going for him.
Come
on, must be nice.
You know him well. There's got to be something where you're like, okay, McVay is deficient here. You're just saying he could overthink football scheme. But there's got to be something he's not good at personally, deficient in some part of his being.
Yeah, I don't have a lot for him in that department. I feel like I need to know him better to really dive into that. Because the thing is, like, 97% of my interactions with him were a professional reporter. You know, we occasionally would get together away from the facility and you know, be able to talk there, as you typically do with, you know, people that you work with, whatever. But
is he a football robot, cyborg? Can you talk to him about other things?
Here, I'll tell you a secondhand story, right? So Chris Cooley is another really good friend of mine, former Redskins tight end, current Redskins broadcaster, and he and Sean are really, really tight. And Cooley's told this story on his podcast, so I'm not breaking any code here. last year at the Combine, Chris and Sean have not seen each other for a long time, but they talked all the time, but in person have not seen each other in a long time. Chris has got two young kids. You know, Sean's got his life out in L.A. Sean's like, hey, are you around? Let's get together. They go up to Sean's hotel room in Indy. Sean's like, hey, how's your family? How are things going? That lasts about 30 seconds before Sean dives in and is like, so I've been thinking about this scheme. And they start drawing stuff out. Like, he certainly can let loose and have fun. Like, he's not a robot, but he really, really likes football. He likes to think about football. He likes to think about philosophy. He likes to think about X's and O's. He just loves it. And that's, I mean, I think that's a necessary trait to be a great coach.
Okay, so he's kind of a football geek.
Yeah.
He wants a football geek out. And I have read this about Sean McVay, that he has worked very hard on balance in his life because it was completely imbalanced.
Yes.
As he got the Rams job. But even those close to him, including his family, are like, he'll never be balanced.
No, balance is a relative term with him. And Veronica, his girlfriend, has helped with that. You know, they have like a life out in L.A. And again, he can cut loose. Like, I mean, Sean, definitely there's some nights out legendary type of things that you'll hear about, stories from his time, especially as a younger coach in D.C. But he's not a guy who is going to, you know, get himself in trouble. One, he's really smart and is image conscious. Like, the other thing about Sean, like, he was in some ways built in a lab to be an NFL head coach, right? His granddad, as I mentioned, and is that most people know, is an architect, or was the architect of the 49ers dynasty run in terms of the front office part of that. But what people don't know as much is his dad is actually a TV executive here in Atlanta. He runs Cox Media, or at least did for a long time. I don't know if he still does. So, like, the combination of the football background and the media background, what more could you want in an NFL head coach? Because those are your two biggest responsibilities. Can you manage the football and can you manage the image? And he was built in a lab to kind of do both.
Craig Hoffman joins us from 106.7 The Fan in D.C. Do you feel like it's a fool's errand for all of these owners to be chasing the ghost of the next Sean McVay, or do you think there are other guys that can do what McVay does?
I mean, I think that they should chase some of the characteristics, but I think that just because you're young and good-looking and a dude doesn't mean that you're going to qualify on the Sean McVay scale. Like,
well, you have to kind of know Sean McVay as well,
right,
apparently.
Right, which has not helped me at all. I have not gotten any coaching offers. I'm very sour about this, but I do know Sean McVay, and I would like to put that out there.
Good to know.
So, I think the traits that make Sean special, it's not just the football, though, it's his people skills. Like, that is the actual secret to McVay's success, is he has tremendous people skills. And so his ability to relate, like, you think one of the more high-profile examples of this is through the Aaron Donald holdout. Aaron Donald never had a bad word to say about Sean McVay, and the way that he was able to instantly reassemble to the team was in part because McVay maintained that relationship. Hey, man, you know, I'm just reaching out. How are things going? You know, he kind of let the front office handle the money side and is like, hey, man, do your thing. I understand. And so being able to massage and manage that relationship meant there was no long-term damage done by the Aaron Donald holdout. That kind of thing is really special, the ability to manage multiple personalities. And, like, I've been sitting with Sean at a bar and seen him text a player because he saw something on NFL Network and was just, like, to build him up because he understood that player's personality, and a random text in the middle of the offseason was going to mean something to that player.
That's got to be the secret sauce to why you can walk into a professional locker room and be the head coach at 31 years old and people care to listen to you.
Oh, yeah. And his first job, you know, he's assistant tight ends. The tight ends coach left. He's now the tight ends coach of the Washington Redskins at 26, in a room with Chris Cooley, super established Pro Bowl player who is 2 years older, and Fred Davis, who was older than Cooley. His first position room was like three dudes and two of them were older than him. And Cooley can be a bit of a pain in the butt to coach because he's really smart and he asks a lot of questions and he's also a little bit of a jokester. And so he was going to push and challenge Sean, and Sean was up to that challenge. Like, that relationship is a key part of McVay's development, because he knew that if he didn't have the answers for Cooley, he was toast.
Yeah, to me, see, this is what all these owners are missing, is that while Sean McVay is a bright offensive mind, has an incredible memory, is very good schematically, obviously, is young and kind of symbolically represents the evolution of the NFL. Who knows if Matt LaFleur is a great people guy with people older than him? Who knows if Zach Taylor is a great people guy? Who knows if Cliff Kingsbury can get 30-year-old paid professionals to follow what he says? That to me is why Sean McVay is Sean McVay. It's not just schematics. Is that you are asking all these chips off of the McVay block to do something, which is be a people person above being a schematic guy. And I don't know if any of those guys can do that the same way.
Yeah, there's a reason that when McVay interviewed, he had two interviews. It was the Rams and the 49ers. And those two teams fought over him. And, you know, the losing team got a really good coach. They got Kyle Shanahan, who I think is terrific. But that's why McVay was over Shanahan. They're both schematic geniuses. Sean's people skills are better than Kyle's. And so that is the secret to McVay. It's not because most of these coaches are really smart. And we see this around the NFL all the time. Like the guy I cover, Jay Gruden's really smart. And Jay's a really good people person. But can you get the things that you're teaching that are mostly equal around the league in terms of knowledge level? Can you actually get the players to execute them and believe in them on a consistent basis? And Belichick's really special at that. McVay's really special at that. Guys like Sean Payton, Andy Reid. Like that's what separates the head coaches in this league is the guys who can take that those people skills and take the football and connect the two. That's what's special.
Credibility. You've got to find a way to get veterans to believe that you have credibility, or even rookies, but you have to find a way for professional adults to believe that what you're telling them is legitimate. And I don't know if McVay will ever go backwards on this now. He got to a Super Bowl and had two seasons of success in his first 2 years. From here on out, I think it's probably he'll always have credibility despite his age or whatever. You know, Bill Belichick fought for credibility when he was a young assistant coach with the Giants, and guys didn't like playing for him. But then they won a Super Bowl with him as DC, and then they won two with him as DC, and Lawrence Taylor started to say, okay, this guy knows who he's talking about. Harry Carson, the same thing, and then you got to fall in line. Once you have that success, it's way easier to walk into a room and sell it. Now that McVay has that at 33 years old, I don't know if you're ever going to put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Right, and because he, well, there's a public accountability aspect to this too. And you talk to Sean, and the first thing he'll tell you is when things go right, it's because of the players, and when things go bad, it's because of the coaches. You're never going to make any players mad saying that. He's always going to come up to the podium after a win and be like, well, it's because I have good players, and you know we put them in the best position we can, but ultimately it's on them to execute, and they did a good job. And when they lose, he's always going to step to the podium and say, I didn't do a good enough job putting him in the right positions to win. He's never going to publicly blame the players, and that goes a long way in an NFL locker room. That's publicly. Privately, he will rip you. And that's something, frankly, Washington has missed since he's left, is there is not a coach on that staff who has that credibility and accountability to go up and but you know, it's also the willingness to do it. Sean will get after you. Like, if you're not doing your job, Sean McVay will be on you if you're a player. There are a lot of other coaches in this league that are a little bit too nice about that sometimes, or could handle things differently. But because he has that respect, that goes over well. His knowledge is kind of the base of that, where people go, I can't doubt him. He's always right. And that goes a long way. That gets the credibility. That then helps create the accountability. And, you know, behind the scenes and publicly, he knows how to manage those two things.
Craig Hoffman joins us from 106.7 The Fan in D.C., when the Vikings signed Kirk Cousins, I said, good signing. They are a quarterback away from being in the Super Bowl, and he is clearly an upgrade over Case Keenum. I might be dead wrong on this. Did you guys snicker in Washington, oh my God, the Vikings are giving him that much money?
No, because we've been through the whole thing and seen how we got there in terms of the progression of the money and how he played the franchise tags and his agent, Mike McCartney, being really smart about all that stuff. It's a lot of money. Like, Kirk Cousins has no... It's a broken system more than there's anything else. Like, Kirk Cousins has no business being the highest-paid player in the NFL. I don't think he's bad. I think he's a good quarterback. This year was not good for him. But ultimately, like, he just was willing to take a monetary risk that most other quarterbacks and most other players weren't. Like, the betting on himself thing, like, right. I understand how we got there. But it does make you, once it happens, take a step back and go, how did we get here where that dude's the highest-paid player in the league?
So, what's his flaw?
I think that Kirk, at times, gets in his own head. Like, he's really smart, and watching film with him, you'd be like, why do you ever make mistakes? He's got a good arm. I think sometimes that gets downplayed, like, oh, he's got a noodle arm. No, he doesn't. He's got a really good arm. But I think sometimes he just overthinks things, and he gets a mental cramp and kind of freaks out. And, you know, he's got big moments where he's been good, but the biggest moments sometimes it hasn't happened for him. And it's not that I don't think he's capable in the long term. I think with more experience, he'll be calmer in those moments and do better. But his learning curve has been present and seeable throughout his career as he's kind of taken some big stumbles and then been able to get over those hurdles mini step by mini step.
It's a little socially awkward, too.
Yeah, he's very robotic. I heard D'Angelo Hall on Good Morning Football this morning say something that I really liked. He's like, Kirk is trying to do a Tom Brady impression at all times. And it's like, what would Brady do? It's like, no, you can't be him. You have to be you. Yeah. And he never has figured that out.
Craig Hoffman covers Washington football for 106.7 The Fan in D.C. Hoff, it was good to catch up with you last night for a little food and beer, some dinner. You got to see Mraz choke down some ribs and chicken.
Guy's struggling this morning a little bit.
I know. Wonder what that's about.
I don't know. It's barbecue and beer. There's a lot of potential struggle there.
We will discuss last night's dinner as part of today's episode of Get Full coming up at hour number three. When we come back, no brow in Boston. AD wants out, but are the Celtics a legit landing spot? We'll do that plus Trash Tuesday. We are live in Atlanta, Radio Row, all week long. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.